This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. You might think a conversation on the Grateful Dead might start with a longtime fan, a hardcore Deadhead who knew the band from its heyday. Turns out we got the idea from a guy who's old enough to attend a concert, but too young to drink there. Our intern, Jake Rutter, told us the Grateful Dead is one of his favorite bands of all time, and he's 19. We heard from many of you who call yourselves Deadheads and were born after frontman Jerry Garcia died in 1995. How does this band continue to cultivate new fans? And what makes the Grateful Dead relevant today? We'll explore those questions and get your thoughts ahead, but first let's hear a little bit more from Jake. He told us about his favorite Grateful Dead song. In the end. So, Jake, tell me what we're listening to.
We're listening to Stella Blue by The Grateful Dead. I was playing The Grateful Dead, you know, on shuffle, and it just came on, and I was like, this is the greatest song I have ever heard in my whole life. Stella Blue. Of all the hundreds of songs and performances that they've done, this is the one that really speaks to me, because it talks about how you can go through your life in so many different stages, from laying all your cards down on a table or staying in every cheap blue light hotel. All those little things add up to what your life is, and it has a theme that recurs, and it's just, it's beautiful, I think.
Did it reflect something of you or your life back at you? I mean, could you see yourself? Could you hear yourself in the song?
A little, I think, because like I said, it's a song that, you know, I think it's a song about reflecting on your whole life, you know? One of the lyrics is, it's all rolls into one. So, meaning all of your memories just jumble into this huge, you know, ball of, this is your life.
I think it might surprise some people to hear you rhapsodize about a song on reflecting about your whole life when you are 19.
Yeah.
You are literally half my age.
Yeah. But like, you know, when you think about the future, it's a very abstract thing to think about. And when I think about the past, it's also an abstract thing to think about, because I forget things and I remember random things. I remember, you know, 2 years ago getting out of the car and slamming it a little hard for no reason. And I feel like that's what the song is really about. It's just like, you know, looking forward to the abstract future and looking back at, you know, all the crazy things that you've done.
That's 1A's Jake Rutter telling us about his favorite Grateful Dead song, Stella Blue. Joining us from CBC Radio in Victoria, British Columbia, is David Lemieux, the archivist for the Grateful Dead. David, welcome to 1A.
Thank you, Joshua. It's great to be here.
Joining us from KUVO in Denver is Holly Bowling, a musician who plays piano in the jam band Ghostlight. She also covers the Grateful Dead's music as a solo artist. Holly, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
And here with us in studio is Casey Ray, the host of the podcast Dead to Me. He's also the director of music licensing at Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Casey, thanks for being with us.
Hey there. Thank you.
David Lemieux, let me start with you. You, as the archivist, have a big 360 picture of the band. How would you sum up the draw of the Grateful Dead, of who they are to the people who love their work?
Well, I think, you know, I think it was Bob Weir who said that the Grateful Dead and the fans, it's all about misfit power. And we're people who are, I think, seeking something a little different than the mainstream. And, you know, it's interesting. I listened to Jake's description of Stella Blue. And, you know, Jake at 19 years old, I mean, I've got 30 years upon his head. And he gets it exactly the way I did 30 years ago, or 35 years ago, in my case, a little younger. And so many of the Dead heads, I think, can relate to exactly what Jake is getting out of it, which is, I think we all get something different, but we all get something that's extremely meaningful to us. And I think that there are so many different ways to get your Grateful Dead fix right now, way more than there were when I was listening 35 years ago when I started listening, whether it's the archival CDs or Dead & Company or podcasts or blogs or new interpretations of the Grateful Dead like what Holly's doing. There's a lot of ways to get your Grateful Dead fix, and I think there's a way for it to speak to everyone, just as it was 35 years ago, but even more now.
Casey Ray, I'd love to get your sense of why interest in the band is growing. It celebrated its 50th anniversary in 2015 with a concert series called Fare Thee Well. Trey Anastasio from Phish took on the part of Jerry Garcia, and he played with the original band members, Bob Weir, Phil Lesh, Bill Kreutzmann, and Mickey Hart. Here is their rendition of I Know You, Rider from July 5th, 2015. Just a piece of that concert from July 5th, 2015. More than 70,000 people showed up at Soldier Field in Chicago for the last day of Fare Thee Well and Heard That. It broke attendance records. Dan Horn, who's a bassist for a cover band called The Grateful Shred, wrote to us that he sees a resurgence in interest since Fare Thee Well. He says it all started with GD50, the name of that concert. Casey, is that it? Was it this concert, or is there something more to it?
You know, I think having the benefit of so many years, 30 years worth of live recordings that David is in a large part responsible for bringing to the world through the Grateful Dead archival project, really gives folks a sense of the contributions of this band, both musically and culturally. I would suspect that a lot of younger people are looking to fulfill something in their lives through that experience, attending a concert or just reveling in, you know, the beauty of this American musical tradition that the Grateful Dead have so amazingly aggregated over the years. It's everything from bluegrass to jazz to good old-fashioned rock and roll and some deeply exploratory stuff as well. So a little something for everybody.
Holly Bowling, I'd love to get your sense of who is in this growing fan. And we heard from a lot of people about the Grateful Dead and the growing fan base. Here's just one of the messages that was left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Molly, and I live here in D.C. You're right. It's not just aging hippies that love this music. I'm a 20-something, and I have a lot of people in my life who are my age, older, younger, who love this music. And it's more than just the songs of the Grateful Dead and of bands like them, but it's really a community. This community, we embrace love and peace, and I know that sounds cliche, but it's true. And if more people could just come to these shows and feel that happiness and those good vibes, the world would be a better place, for real.
No doubt the world could use more love and peace, Holly, for sure. Or Molly, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. So from Molly to Holly, you're a part of that community. Tell us about the fans at your shows and the kinds of walks of life that they come from.
You know, I think one of the most incredible things about the Grateful Dead and the community around them is the fan base and the wide range that it spans. And at my shows, as well as when I go see these shows, I really notice, you know, you have, as you've seen here, there's, you know, people who are 19 and people who have been seeing the Dead since the 60s and are still going and are still finding that that emotional release that, they're, you know, that people chase when they go see music. And to see a fan base that has 19-year-olds and, you know, people in their 70s all hanging out together and all vibing off the same thing is really incredible. And, I think back then when this all started, as well as now, there's been this thing that society sets out for people, that this is the way you live your life and this is the path you follow and these are the boxes you check. And I think there's always been a subset of people that don't want to sign up for that. And I think that that appeal was around then, and it's just as relevant now. And I think that, you know, people are finding that gateway to something else through the Dead, and it spans generations.
Christy in Martha's Vineyard emailed, my 20-year-old daughter has become a fan of the Grateful Dead as a result of going to Dead & Company shows with my 54-year-old husband, who was a Dead fan in college. It's become a really special way for them to bond over music, which spans the generational gap. David, I'd love to get your reaction to that when we continue. I'm Joshua Johnson. So glad to be with you. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. By the suds and the phone, been here so long, he's got to calling it home. Come
arms are crawling. Goliath, be woman, spinning that curious sense of your own.
This message comes from NPR sponsor ADT. America's trusted home security company can help protect you against break-ins, fires, and carbon monoxide. 24/7 emergency response when you need it most. More at ADT.com.
I feel pretty.
When do we feel pretty?
Oh, so pretty.
Why do we feel pretty? And who gets to decide what pretty is? We'll answer our listeners' questions all about beauty this week on the Code Switch podcast.
This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the popularity of the Grateful Dead, even among young people who were never around to see the original band play live. We've heard from a lot of deadheads for this program. Here's another message that was left in our inbox.
Hey, this is Dan calling from Chester, Vermont. My years were 1980 to 1985. I saw well over 100 shows. And nowadays, there are lots of young people getting involved in the whole Grateful Dead scene or the Dead and Company scene because it's an economy. It's a social economy, and I don't mean it's a way to make money. I mean it's a way to live one's entire life on tour, making T-shirts, making bumper stickers, hanging out with friends. It's community. It's social economy. That's why I did it. The music was just one part of the puzzle.
David Lemieux, could I ask you to respond to Dan's voicemail, this idea of it being a social economy and kind of how that emerged? Was that ever the plan? Did that catch the band by surprise? What's your thought on that?
Well, I can say with a good amount of certainty that I don't think anything in the Grateful Dead world was ever the plan. I think that things just happened, and if they worked, they kept going. And I do think that Dan really touched upon something about it being bigger than he used the word economy, and it's much more than the commercial side of things. I have found in my personal life that being a deadhead, while of course it starts with the music, and that's what we all focus on, it is also it's a lifestyle choice. I think is a way to say it too, is that I don't find I know too many casual Dead fans. I feel that these are people who embrace it and it becomes a huge part of their life. And whether that is planning their vacations around going to shows or making sure that they're up to date on the newest music releases, we do a lot of archival CD releases, or making sure that they have their podcast, or it's a lot of the other things that are going on now. And I mentioned Holly and music, like people like Holly are making, where there's so many different ways to consume their Grateful Dead. And I don't mean consume in the financial economic sense. I mean there's so many ways to get your fix. And I think that, as Dan said, he's talking about seeing shows 35 years ago or more, and it's exactly the same thing now, where there's just so many ways to be a deadhead, but overall, it's much more than just the music.
Let me get to a few more of your comments. Katie writes, I knew very little about the Grateful Dead until my all-time favorite artist, John Mayer, joined in with Dead & Company. He's the reason I started listening to them. Dead & Company is a super group of original band members and John Mayer. They've been touring together since 2015, playing Grateful Dead music. Their North American tour last year sold more than 600,000 tickets. It was one of the top 20 grossing tours in North America for the year, and the summer 2019 dates have already been announced. John Mayer says he became a fan of the Grateful Dead in 2011. Here he is explaining what appealed to him about their music on CBS News Sunday Morning.
I had never heard anything like it, Grateful Dead. And, you know, these great bands, these seminal bands, they will find you at a time in your life. Mm-hmm. You can't say you're not into it. You just say you're not into it yet, right. You know. Bob Dylan found me at a time where it was the right time, and Neil Young found me at a time when it was the right time. And when Grateful Dead music found me, it was the perfect moment because I was out. I'd fallen a little out of love with what was left in music.
That's John Mayer speaking to CBS Sunday Morning. Casey Ray, I'd love to get your reaction to what John Mayer said in terms of finding you at the right time in your life.
It's so well put. I mean, if John Mayer and I have anything in common, it's late onset Dead fandom. I was writing a book called William S. Burroughs. And
that almost sounds like a medical condition. Like, well, yeah. This one's got late onset Dead fandom, yeah, but he's going
to
make it.
Go to a doctor and see if you can get rid of it. I did not get rid of it. I was so compelled by this band that I had to create a podcast called Dead to Me to get get my thoughts about this band out of my head. I was probably the least likely Dead fan around. I was coming from punk rock and hardcore and experimental music communities. I didn't really understand the vibe of the shows. I had an opportunity to see the Dead in the 80s. I didn't go because I didn't really fit in with the folks who I assumed represented all Deadheads. In doing our podcast, I've come to understand that the Grateful Dead community is incredibly diverse, lots of brilliant people, and I think that intelligence and curiosity comes from the band itself. This band aren't just a bunch of lazy hippies. They're intellectually voracious. They're extremely committed to exploring music and the American experience through their own art, and that really reflects back to the community, who in turn create their own interesting ways of participating.
Casey, do you remember what the song or album was that kind of turned you onto them?
You know, honestly, I got to give props to Jake again for Stella Blue. I was writing a book about William S. Burroughs, the beat writer, and his influence on musicians. And there was a scene where Jerry Garcia met William S. Burroughs in Amsterdam. When you're writing a book, you got to produce tons of words. Nobody tells you that at the outset. Seems like a fun idea. I would put on Grateful Dead concerts in the background just to sort of feel it out. And at one point I heard the song Stella Blue, and much like Jake, I was touched by its depictions of beauty and impermanence in a human life. I had just had a baby daughter, and like John Mayer said, you know, the music found me at this amazing time. And then I started to understand all of these intersections with other aspects of the American experience, and that inspired me to give something back in a small way to the community through our show, which looks at, it's about the Grateful Dead in the same way that Friday Night Lights is about football. We're looking at everything around the music and also the music.
Holly Bowling, how did you get into the Grateful Dead?
My pathway is interesting. I actually grew up with the music of the Dead. My parents listened to it all the time when I was a kid. So that's like the soundtrack to my childhood and some of the first music that I remember hearing, and, you know, remember hearing my dad's voice singing around the house. But that was, for me, like the first layer of getting into the Dead. There were a couple Dix Picks albums in there, but a lot of Studio Dead, which is a weird way to come into it and kind of the opposite of how most people do, I think. So I had that as sort of step one. And then when I was in high school and after I graduated, I started going to shows and trading recordings through the mail. I never traded tapes. I was of a generation where we were doing CDs and, you know, blanks and postage. And so that was sort of the second window for me where I fell in love with the music again in a different way. It was no longer the music from my childhood and my family. It was something that I had more ownership of and was now my thing. And, you know, started developing a community of friends that I was seeing shows with, and starting to chase that live moment of release and joy and escape and all those things that we go see music for. And then later on, when I started doing their music in a solo piano context, I kind of fell in love with it a third time all over again in a different way. And, you know, just to be able to go to a song that you've heard your entire life, literally like my entire life, and hear it with new ears and start picking it apart and listening in a different way and still find something new there to dig into and to fall in love with and to continue, you know, the songs just have so much depth. To be able to keep digging and digging and always finding something new to grab you that you can hold on to is just incredible.
Speaking of your piano performances, I want to play the song Eyes of the World. We'll play the original and we'll play your version of it. First, here's the Grateful Dead playing Eyes of the World on June 18th, 1974. And then here is that same live version of the song on piano by Holly Bowling. That's Holly Bowling's rendition of Eyes of the World, preceded by the original by the Grateful Dead from 1974. Holly, talk us through the process of how you created that piano version of Eyes of the World. I imagine there were certain pieces that you wanted to remain very faithful to and certain places where you felt comfortable improvising.
You know, that one, there's actually very little improvisation. The solo piano renditions I do of the Grateful Dead's music ranges really from two opposite polarities, one of them being to take a song and, you know, arrange the head of it where there's usually lyrics and then improvise in my own style for often lengthy, lengthy periods. And then on the other extreme, there's these very faithful renditions, which is what this version of Eyes of the World is, where I was so captivated by the improvisation that they created as a unit and this music that was made spontaneously in the moment that that I wanted to recreate it, but in a different light. So I was kind of taking the idea of if there's like a classical work of music that was originally for an ensemble, sometimes people will make a piano reduction of it and take all of those instruments parts and put it on the single instrument. And I wanted to do that for this music that in most people's minds is very far removed from the classical repertoire or canon. So I for this one, I sat down. I was pretty loose with the verse and chorus section because I wanted to do something different with that part. But when it comes to the improv, which is really what sold me on this version from 74, I sat down with a bunch of staff paper and a pencil and a pair of headphones, and I just listened to little segments, you know, 10 seconds at a time, and wrote down all of the parts note for note, and then tried to arrange that into something that was playable on one instrument with two hands. And so there's not really any improv in that version. It's more just a set of decisions about what lines to bring into the foreground or into the light and what to leave in the background, and how to create something that captures the energy and the emotion from that performance.
Connor emailed, "I'm 30, not old enough to have seen them live. With the explosions of bands like Dead & Company and different jam bands, my love for them has grown. These bands allow me to feel what it was like during the Dead's 30-year run, and I don't feel like I missed out on anything. I feel like I'm living it now." David, I'd love for you to react to Connor's email, particularly this perception among younger fans that they feel like they were there. There's always a little bit of historical rewriting that comes along with distance. And, you know, the past looks very rose-colored the further out you are from it.
I'd say that's very true. You know, one thing I've always said is I meet a lot of younger fans who didn't see the Grateful Dead with Jerry, but they are clearly as big a fan as I am, as any of us are. And there's a phrase in the Grateful Dead world, you're either on the bus or you're off the bus. And my point is always that there's plenty of room on this bus, and it is unlimited. There's always going to be room on the bus. And what I've found is there's a saying that I've heard before in the tape trading world, deader than thou. And that has to do with, well, I saw more shows
than thou.
Deader than thou. And I saw more shows than you, and I have more tapes than you, and all that. And I never bought into that. And I think most people don't. And what I've found with the younger fans is that rather than there being a sense of older fans looking down on these younger fans because they weren't there when Jerry was around, I think it's the opposite, where you've got, I mean, I certainly don't look down on that. I look down almost as something that I take it as a bit of an honor to be able to maybe even mentor these people, these younger fans. And I find that there's more a sense of maybe these younger fans looking up at those people, but at the same time, when you're at the show and there's somebody who's 50 years old and somebody who's 20 years old, we're all there for one reason, right? And it's Grateful Dead music. It has nothing to do with the Jerry Garcia version of the Grateful Dead or what's going on with Dead & Company. We're all there for the same reason. It's to celebrate the Grateful Dead's music. And I think there, again, I'll go back to it, there's plenty of room on this bus.
Casey, before we pause, would you chime in on Connor's comment also?
Yeah, sure. I think that there's an element of this where the warts and all aspect of the Grateful Dead can be embraced in the moment. As Holly said, it all happens in the moment where there's that feeling of collective participation. That's something you get from the shows. I also think that the Grateful Dead broke a ton of ground and were extremely innovative in terms of music business models, live sound reinforcement, direct-to-fan stuff like ticketing that has over the years become so much a part of the present-day music experience. experience. And there's a lot that we take for granted, but there's something still very special and unique about the band's ethos. And it's really encouraging that younger fans can tap into some of that energy in our current time.
Block Stomper tweeted, "I find Grateful Dead to be unbelievably mediocre and underwhelming. I see their popularity as a result of drug culture and cult-like social bonding. The music seems secondary to these aspects." So what do you say to people who are off the bus and like it there? Stay close.
In the Trump era, the news moves faster than ever, and the NPR Politics podcast is there to keep you informed. Every time there's a major political story, we get our best correspondents together to sort through the noise. The NPR Politics podcast, what you need to know right after it happens.
Before we continue, let's listen to a clip from the band's drummer, Bill Kreutzmann, talking about the song The Other One. This clip is from the 2017 documentary, Long Strange Trip.
That song allowed me to say, God, man, we can do anything. That's when I really knew there were no limitations. The only limitations were my imagination.
That was Grateful Dead drummer Bill Kreutzmann from the documentary Long Strange Trip. Hey, by the way, we know some of you are listening today because the band shared our announcement of this show on their official Facebook page. Welcome. We are so glad you're with us today. Glad that also that you shared some of your stories with us, some of which are just too cute for words. Jason emailed, "I just took my 4-year-old daughter, Scarlett, to the shows in Mexico where she saw her first scarlet begonias. She was thrilled. I've been a Dead fan since college in the early 90s. My college-age nieces now join me at shows thanks to John Mayer, and they've come to love the Dead as well. My wife has even come to enjoy them. David is right. It's the music." Contrast that with what Block Stomper tweeted. Block Stomper writes, "I find Grateful Dead to be unbelievably mediocre and underwhelming. I see their popularity as a result of drug culture and cult-like social bonding. The music seems secondary to these aspects." Casey, as soon as I read that, I saw you start scribbling notes furiously on that little legal pad over there. You should have seen his face. He went, oh, and started like, he was burning up.
I'll cop to that.
Yes. So what's your reaction? Now, let's, to be fair, there is that whole connotation about drug culture, Haight-Ashbury,
yeah,
San Francisco,
sure,
in the late 60s. Like, there is a tad of truth to that.
Look, I come from the Dead skeptic community originally, so I have a lot in common with that commenter. Back when the Dead were active, they were the world's largest mobile psychedelic cult. But it just helps that I'm actually interested in things like cults. So, you know, that's actually an attractive point for me, at least in terms of looking at the evolution of that community. I think Bob Weir was asked his feelings on Deadheads once, and he said something to the effect of, "They're great. The only issue I have with them is they have a tendency to only listen to the Grateful Dead." I think that's changing, though. When I talk to young people, you know, these are kids who are just musically voracious. They listen to all kinds of different styles. I know metal fans who are into the Dead. I know hip-hop fans who are into the Dead. And so it's maybe a little less hermetic and insular than it was, 25 years ago.
Holly, I'd love to get your take on this as well. But first, let me play another take from a young fan of the Grateful Dead. Here's what Ryan left in our inbox.
Hi, my name is Ryan, and I'm calling from Fort Collins, Colorado. I'm 29, and I think that this is happening because there's a low-key, underground, psychedelic renaissance happening right now in the United States. As people are looking into this, they're finding that they need to draw from some experience of the past, and the Grateful Dead has deep, deep linkages with psychedelic culture.
Ryan, thanks for calling in and sharing your thoughts with us. Holly, what's your take on that?
Honestly, I was still hung up on the comments from the last time around and was thinking about the guy that wasn't into the Dead.
Oh, really? Well, what would you say
to him?
Sorry,
I've been kind of lost in my head on that
one. That's okay.
I just think, you know, it's never been for everybody. And that's fine. You know, it's never been a mainstream thing. It's always been kind of a bunch of outlaws and misfits and mischief makers. And for me, like with what I'm doing with the Dead's music on piano, one of the biggest honors and things that I hold closest is hearing that people who have never been able to understand the Dead or appreciate what they do, that someone's played them one of my versions of it, and that's opened the doorway for them to get it and then end up diving into the catalog and understanding this incredible thing that right. the Dead have created. So for me, that's it's a huge honor and really special.
A few more of your stories in the time we have left. Lauren emailed, at age 17, while on a plane to Europe, an older businessman gave me his set of weathered old tapes from the 1977 San Bernardino show, which features the live debut of the song Terrapin Station. A few months later, I popped it in my car stereo and fell in love. 22 years later, they're still my favorite band. Before we go, we should definitely play a clip of Jerry Garcia, the name perhaps most closely associated with the Grateful Dead. Here he is in a 1989 interview talking about Deadheads.
They're everything from street people to solid professionals. You know, they're all over the place. They're on Capitol Hill. You know, they're in part of a heart and lung team. You know, out in Sacramento, they're everywhere. They've permeated society. You know, they've become mainstream in a way.
Jerry Garcia speaking in a 1989 interview, and Casey, he is right on the Capitol Hill piece because House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is a fan of the Grateful Dead. Mickey Hart was at her recent swearing-in ceremony where she became Speaker of the House for the second time, one of the only lawmakers to be Speaker of the House twice. So it would seem like Jerry Garcia was right 30 years ago, and he's right now.
Yeah, isn't it something? The appeal also seems to be bipartisan. You have folks on the other side of the aisle like Ann Coulter and Tucker Carlson, who are also self-professed Deadheads. I think it speaks to a larger aspect of the Grateful Dead that does represent America, warts and all. You know, you have this aggregating aspect in their music where, you know, strains of jazz, bluegrass, rhythm and blues, and other deeply American musical traditions are present. And then also there's the 1960s counterculture that the Dead came out of, which they emerged from an environment that was steeped in Eastern spirituality and psychedelic drugs and the Beat Generation. And I think it's part of a larger project of understanding human consciousness. So, you know, who doesn't that appeal to?
David, before we let you go, what's next for Grateful Dead fans? Anything they should be keeping an eye out for?
Yeah, always. Keep an eye on dead.net. It's the official website where we keep all of the activities up to date. And it's interesting, you just mentioned that the caller specifically mentioned the San Bernardino 77 show, which is being released on CD tomorrow, which is amazing timing that was mentioned in this call. So we do our series of archival releases. We do four big ones a year, and then we do a huge box set every year, sometimes two. And we've got all sorts of things going on. We've got the SiriusXM Grateful Dead channel, Channel 23, and that's a 24/7 Dead channel. So there's so many ways, and just keep an eye on dead.net and Facebook and Twitter, and we'll keep you posted on what's going on.
One last thing for folks who have stuck with this conversation, but they're not Grateful Dead fans at all. What should they listen to first? What's a good place to start? Briefly, David, let me start with you and I'll work my way around briefly. David, where should they start?
I'm going to say American Beauty. Start with American Beauty, maybe Working Man's Dead, and then if they want to get a little deeper, go with Live Dead. Go with those three records, and you can't go wrong, and you'll get a taste of everything the Grateful Dead is about.
And be clear, he's not talking about the movie in 1999. He's talking about an album called American Beauty. Holly Bowling, where should they start?
I mean, I think David's answer is pretty spot on. I also think it'd be a solid move to find someone in your life that's passionate about the Dead and go to a show with them. You know, just jump right in with both feet.
Casey Ray, where should they start if someone's brand new to the band?
I'm just going to push them right into the deep end of the pool and say Europe 1972. If you can come out the other side of another one with your mind intact, then you win the prize of being a Deadhead.
So you want to blow somebody's mind right off. That's a little strong, isn't it?
Well, enlightenment is sometimes a sudden transformative experience.
I hear that. Casey Ray, the host of the podcast Dead to Me, also the director of music licensing at SiriusXM Satellite Radio. Casey, thanks for spending the hour with us.
Thank you.
Holly Bowling, a musician who plays as a solo pianist and in the band Ghostlight. Holly, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And David Lemieux, the audio and video archivist for The Grateful Dead. David, thank you so much.
Thank you, Joshua.
Remember, to those of you deadheads who are new to the program, you can check out our website, the1a.org, where we shared a playlist of Grateful Dead music from then and now. This conversation was produced by Jake Rutter and Avery Kleinman and edited by Miranda Fulmore. To learn more about them and the rest of our team, visit the1a.org/staff. Until we meet again, I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.